In this episode of the Exploring Information Security Podcast, what are deep fakes?
Computers now have primary control of critical functions.
Houston, recommend a vector transfer.
Your go for APU shutdown on time.
Roger, go for deploy.
Nice to be in orbit.
Welcome to the Exploring Information Security Podcast, where you'll learn, explore, and grow your security mindset. I am your host, Timothy DeBlock, and in this episode, we'll be exploring what are deepfakes. With me today to do that is cybersecurity researcher, Dr. Donnie Wendt. Show notes can be found at explorsec.com/EIS. Support the podcast by donating. Hit the donate button. There's a newsletter. You can sign up for the newsletter. Feedback for the show, timothy.dblock@explorsec.com. You can hit me up on LinkedIn. You can rate the podcast on your favorite podcast platform. This was a really great one. This is one that we kind of dive into deep fakes. I really want to get some more AI-focused podcasts out there. This was a really good one with Dr. Wendt. I actually saw him at the Palmetto Cybersecurity Conference in 2024, back in February, and he gave a really great talk about deepfakes, how easy it is to get into them, and what you can kind of do with them, and talks about some of the ramifications. I also really enjoyed that at the end we kind of get into, you know, some of the actual use cases, right? Like actual good use cases for it, you know, talking about bans and other stuff. So, you know, it's here to stay. It's going to make a huge impact. And as far as security goes, yeah, it's something we're going to have to be aware of. And I will tell you, my security awareness role, deepfakes is something that I'm going to be researching a little bit more. And I think it's a great training opportunity, too, to show people within there. But this is a really great first podcast on kind of AI and AI security. And again, really diving into deepfakes. So I think this is going to be good for both security people and, you know, people outside of the industry to really start getting a grasp on the technology. So with that, let's get into it.
Well, actually, what I first got interested was it was a few years, probably 2-3 years ago. And one of the people from, at the time I was working for MasterCard, and it was through our Fusion Center, asked me, have you heard of this thing called deepfakes? Could you do a presentation on it? Okay, so I'll go back and figure out what this is. I had no clue. I hadn't worked with it before. Went home, set up a home lab using open source tools, and started experimenting with it so that I could then present to our leadership team threat briefing on what deepfakes are and how they could impact the business. So it was actually one of those where I just said, okay, sure, I'll go do it, even though I'd had never really messed with them before, but I like playing around with things. So I went and did that.
Okay. So I guess what are deepfakes?
What they do is they actually, it's a way to use machine learning to create, essentially swap out someone's likeness, like their face, onto another person. They've actually been around for several years. Initially, it was mostly, you know, people putting famous celebrities or actresses into very, you know, very poor videos, in poor taste, but they, and then later we started seeing that technology used a lot more in other realms, especially in social engineering, politics, propaganda. But it's essentially taking it takes two machine learning models and have them compete against each other until it can create a viable fake of the person.
Yeah, I think what wanted me to have you on is your presentation at the Palmetto Cybersecurity Conference back in February, and you were talking about you picked like Nick Cage to join Calls for It Work.
Oh yes, he became a regular guest in our security briefings. So Nicholas Cage would often give his take on security threats that we were facing. So it became kind of a, he sort of became part of our security team.
Yeah. Well, and you, like you said, you just went and grabbed open source tools. So it seems fairly easy to just start doing.
Yes. Yeah, so everything, and that was my concept when I first started. I wanted to make sure whatever I used was just readily available, open source. Doing it on a, you know, a regular workstation at home, the only thing really that you need is a good video card. So, you know, like a good NVIDIA video card. And from there, just using the open source tools, I was able to create quite a few deepfakes along the way over the last several years.
So how does that actually work? Because you said it's like two, it's essentially taking two different AI models and having them pretty much.
Yeah, it's one way that the term they use is a generative adversarial network, or a GAN. So you essentially have a regular machine learning classifier that's trying to classify the image as real or fake. And then you have another generative AI model creating these images and they basically compete against each other, right? So trying to get to the point where you're creating realistic fake images. Most of the time, you know, this could be anywhere from 100,000 to 500,000 iterations. So to give you an example, on a video card, typically I would be running that for, you know, up to 2 to 3 days nonstop. So it takes quite a bit of processing to do that, to get it to where it's realistic. But once you have that model, you can then apply it. Like I would be able to apply it in real time. So once I had that model, that's what allowed me to say, come into the meetings as Nicolas Cage, because I had a model trained to change my face to his.
So is that, so as far as that setup, like you said it took a couple days for that to actually, and then once you got that squared away, you could just have it do it almost instantaneously, kind of like a filter.
Yeah. So like in real time, I would have to put about a 400 millisecond delay in my audio to match my audio to the voice. So that's all it took, was about 300 to 400 milliseconds, which on a video call is not noticeable at all.
No. That's yeah. And you showed some of that stuff as well, too. So how do you feed it like Nicolas Cage's face then? Is this just like pictures that you need, or video, or a combination of both?
Yeah, you can do it. You could use pictures, but it's going to take thousands of pictures. It's better if you have a video, because a minute of video becomes thousands of pictures, right? So I would typically use a video of the target and a video of me, right? And that's what I would use to train the models.
Gotcha. Okay. So you still need your own face.
Yeah, a minute or two of the models, of the videos, and that's all it really takes.
Yeah, and that's actually a little scary, right? Because there's a lot of, and especially with cell phones, you can probably get video on just about everyone nowadays.
Right. Yes, and of course, anybody in the public arena is going to have videos out there on the internet as well. Just like this one. So I could go later and maybe deepfake you.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you have to really go that far, because we're both bald and bearded.
Right. It's fairly easy to do. Now, it takes a lot of trial and error when you're first getting started to figure out, mm-hmm. you know, what's the best input, what models, because there's all kinds of different models you can use to train. So just try and experiment with those and figure out which ones work best.
So does Face ID, have you seen where that's used to like log into like a Face ID, or seen any research around that, or did you try it yourself?
Yeah, so there's you know, they're it's really right now, it's kind of a cat and mouse game between facial recognition and deepfake technology, right? So that's why I always urge, if we are using any sort of facial recognition for authentication in that, that we constantly test it against the latest deepfake technology, mainly because both technologies are advancing rapidly. So you have to make sure you're staying ahead of that. A lot of them have what they call liveness detection in them now, so that they're doing more of a 3D view in the facial recognition, so that helps. And there are things that we can build into systems, and some of the facial recognitions do, to try to discover a deep fake. You know, things like inconsistencies in the face, eye blinking, just details in the teeth or eyes. So there's all kinds of things that we can use machine learning to detect deep fakes, right? But again, that technology is changing so rapidly, we have to stay ahead of that.
Yeah, so it's like you said, it's a bit of a cat and mouse game. So you're almost so can people with the naked eye spot these deepfakes, or do we have to rely on machine learning? Is it just that nuanced?
Yeah, with the technology today, if you're looking at it really close, you can probably detect it, but it's rapidly getting to the point where the human will not be able to detect a really good, high quality one. And that's, you know, especially on live stream, there's, you can typically detect it if you're paying real close attention, but I don't know how much longer that'll last. This technology is advancing too rapidly for humans to detect.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's almost because you've seen this used already in movies and commercials and like even online, right?
And one of the big use, what we've seen in the last several months is uses in politics. I mean, it was in Slovakia in the election just last September, where the day before the election, there was a deep fake of one of the leading candidates, and he was a very pro-Western candidate, and this deepfake came out the day before talking about how he rigged the election, and he wound up losing it in a very close call to a very pro-Russian candidate who wanted this, you know, cut off aid to Ukraine in that. So what we saw it appear there, and then just in February, it was a really crazy one where in Pakistan, the day before the election, it was a very coordinated attack on one political party, where there were deepfakes of six or seven leaders of that party all coming out saying, please boycott the election, you know, to their followers. And since they did it so coordinated with seven different leaders all saying, delivering the same message, it was very realistic. So that's where we're starting to see it appear a lot, is in politics, propaganda, and of course in entertainment. It's becoming very large in entertainment industry as well.
So how do you verify something like that? Like it, especially with those politicians, right? Like how can we really trust or believe? Because someone could say something dumb now and use that, like they actually did say something dumb or did say something silly, and then they go, oh, it was a deep fake, right? So how do you actually verify all that?
Yes. Politicians never say anything dumb, right? You know, and it's really one of those where we have to have we have to look at it with a little bit of skepticism. But we also have to employ a lot of critical thinking. You know, is this something, does this sound right? Is this something this person would be saying now? I mean, this just doesn't seem right to me. Now there is like Congressional Research Service put out an article recently about what they're calling the liar's dividend, right? Which is where there is real footage, say, of me doing something wrong, but then I just claim that it was faked. And now it's on you to prove that it was real, right? So it's this can lead to a lot of follow-on issues as we go forward. When you think of, like, every human relationship at some level is built on trust, right? And that's what's troubling to me about some of the uses of this technology, is because it's targeting that trust, you know, and trying to disrupt that trust in each other and even in what your ears and eyes tell you.
Yeah, so I mean, it sounds like something, especially if it's a bit, what's the word, kind of out there a little bit, we need to just take a minute to really evaluate, like I said, use that critical thinking and potentially even, you know, I'll tell you, a lot of times when I'm watching the security community and something new comes out or vulnerability, I kind of let that bake a little bit before I start like really getting fired up about something. Because usually for me, it's like 3 days. That's when the real good information really starts finally coming out about it.
Yeah. And, you know, there are things you can do to try to verify some of the facts that are being stated, things like that. But yeah, it's troubling when you start seeing how easy it is to create these. And also, like when I did at that presentation, I created this fake campaign to destroy the reputation, right, of this fictitious bank, where I had a video of the chief security officer making really horrendous statements. And that was all backed up because I used generative AI to also create fake news articles, fake Twitter feeds, all of this. So when you see that coming, you know, and all it takes is for a few people to really believe it's true, then they'll start sharing it. And that's when I say it's disinformation becomes misinformation, right? Because that initial person created with the intent to harm that bank, but all these other people believe it to be true. Because they see all this evidence, so they start sharing it. And that's when the real problem comes. And that's why I encourage all organizations, right, to monitor, make sure they're monitoring for any sort of, you know, video or news articles and that coming out purporting to be from or about like their leadership. Because you have to get on this quick if someone does start one of these campaigns against your organization.
Yeah. And speaking of that, did you see the attack where someone joined a video call and it was, I guess, a bunch of deep fakes, even up to the voice as well? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was over in, I can't remember whether it's China, Hong Kong or somewhere, but the gentleman got on there and he thought he was having a call with his chief financial officer and members of the CFO staff. Everyone on the call except this victim were deepfakes, ordering him to essentially make a transfer of, I think it's like $25 million or something, right? So he believed all this. He's got all these various people telling him to do this. So he followed through.
How prevalent do you think that will become? Because that to me does sound a little bit more elaborate. Or do you just, you know, and I feel like that you have to, like, the attackers have to do a little bit more research, not to say that that won't happen, but
right.
I don't know that it'll ever necessarily replace phishing emails, because they're kind of a low bar to entry. And if you can get someone to click on it, then you don't have to go deep fake somebody else, right?
Yeah, create a whole script. This would be more on the level of, say, a spear phishing, where you are taking the time to gather intelligence, first of all, about your target, what their role is in the company, who they report to, who do they work with. You've got to do a lot of research to create something like that, right? Once they've done that, once they've done the research and figured out the target, that's when then you can start applying this technology. But I think that would be more of a persistent threat where somebody is actually gathering the upfront intel on your company. Of course, through some of our social media, you can go through and gather quite a bit of open source intel to basically prepare for an attack like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, LinkedIn, you can just find everybody on there, and usually it's high enough up. I could definitely see, especially if you're targeting like millions of dollars, right?
Yeah,
that could be worth it for, you know, I guess chump change in the criminal world. But I guess what can people do then for even like attacks like that?
Well, on that, you know, first of all, you make sure you have very sound processes in place. Especially when you're talking about a transfer of something like $25 million, there should be some checks and balances in place to ensure that doesn't occur, even if this guy believes it to be true, right? So it's making sure we have those processes in place to deal with that. It's also one of those, you know, if you set it up where, for instance, you know, in my previous role, I would never expect my boss to call me on my phone. He never did that on my work phone. So I get a call on my work phone. I know this is fake. But then in the video, even if you have it set up where if this is something that's asking me to do, take action, have a process in place where I then call back to that person to verify, right? So in that case, if my boss came on and told me to start transferring this money and I could go along with that, but then before I did anything, I would then be contacting him in another channel directly to verify, right?
Yeah, and in a known good channel, right? Not calling the back on the same number. Yeah, do you consider, because we're talking about deep fakes, and I kind of focus that on like more the video, but do you feel like voice is considered deep fakes too? Because that's becoming, you consider the same category. Okay.
Yeah, it uses a lot of the same technology, and currently there's some really troubling ones going on where, you know, scammers are essentially calling people and acting like they're a loved one that's in trouble or in danger or need money. And unfortunately, a lot of these are targeting our senior citizens, which, you know, to me is just gets me really upset when I start hearing about things like that. But it doesn't take, all I need is a short recording of your voice, because now there are applications out there where I could just create a voice model and then have you say anything I want over the phone or over any, you know, voice channel. So it is kind of scary when you
start. I'm hooked.
And then you can combine those two. So I did that recently with a company wanted me to do a deepfake of their CEO to present to their board of directors to show how this technology could be used. So I not only deepfaked his face, I also did his voice as well. So I had the CEO doing a presentation to the board, but it was me. So it's the technology is there, and the bar to entry is fairly low. I mean, I say you have to have some technical background, like say a good video card, maybe some, you know, and that's about it, because most of it's pretty available. And now we're starting to see a lot of these more mass market tools coming on the marketplace, where you can just essentially create any sort of voice model you want.
Yeah, that's crazy, especially for like someone like me, right? I've got probably 400 hours podcast content online. And I've actually started telling my family, I'm like, if I'm ever in trouble, like, you know, almost like also setting up like secret words. Here's the word I'm going to actually use, right? So now we're actually going backwards a little bit as far as security goes. We're not using authenticators because we can't trust it at this point, right? So we need to have some sort of safe word or something to, because in the same thing, my parents are at the age where they're retiring, right? And it's like, if you get text, like before it's text, which are pretty easy to identify, but if you hear my voice and I'm calling you, like you might want to like double check that.
Right. Yes. Yes. And that's, you know, when we, it doesn't take a lot of voice recording. So that's one of the ones that's also concerning is when, say, one of these scammers may do an initial call and just try to get you in a conversation on the phone. So that they can record your voice. Mm-hmm. So they can use it later to then go after one of your, like in that case, then use that to call your mom. And that's what a lot of times, like I had to tell, you know, people in my family, is you get a call and you don't know who they are, don't get in a conversation with them, right? Just don't do that. Just hang up. I know it goes against, you know, what we're taught to be nice and polite. Mm-hmm. No, it's okay to just hang up on them.
Hey, it is funny that we have a bit of a mismatch there because we talk about stranger danger. It's like we almost need to start bringing back more stranger danger. Don't talk to strangers again anymore, which I'm sure any salesperson listening to this is going, no, because, you know, they're the ones trying to actually, they are people that have to go out and meet people and talk to them.
Yes.
So, all right. What resources do you recommend for anybody that would want to like dive more into deepfakes?
Well, there's a lot of them out there as far as just under, if you're looking at like how it's been used and things like that, that, you know, there's a lot of articles that come out about the use of this. If you're looking at trying to, and I always encourage, you know, security professionals to play with the technology because that's how we better understand how we can do it. There was actually the one that I used to get started, and it's really a good one to kind of understand what's going on, is from it's an open source tool called faceswap.dev. And the reason why I liked it, especially for someone trying to understand this technology, is it incorporates many of the different algorithms that are out there. So you can play with the different ones and try to see which works best. And just really get an understanding for how these are created. So there are quite a few out there. That's a great one if you're just wanting to explore how are these created? How can I do this? What does it take? And as long as you got a good video card, you're all set.
Yep. Which I think a lot of people in this day and age have. Yeah. I know I've, you know, it's just my gaming rig.
So. Oh yeah, if you're a gamer, you're all set up.
Yeah.
And that's why a few years ago when I first got into this, it was tough because that's right when we had the video card shortage, and all the gamers and crypto miners, they were lining up whenever you heard of an NVIDIA drop, right, at a local store. They were going crazy a couple of years back, but looks like the supply chain finally worked out now.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What are some of your closing thoughts?
I think in this, one thing I always like to say, because, you know, I, in security, I get really, we see the dark side of this. So I always like to kind of leave on, there are very positive use cases for this technology. The same sort of technology is being used in many different ways in a positive sense. There's an organization that was using it to give voice back to ALS patients who had lost, you know, Lou Gehrig's disease, who over time had lost their ability to speak. But by using this technology, their loved ones can hear them again. We've seen where a group used some of this technology to basically deliver the speech that President Kennedy never gave because he was shot that day. So, you know, we're starting to see this being used in a lot of ways. I know the technology is also being used in the medical field to try to do diagnosis of rare diseases, cancer diagnosis and things like that, because they can start training models to detect this, but they can use generated imaging in that as the input. So it starts improving a lot of that. So I just like to say, yes, what we, you know, us on the security side, we're always playing on that dark side. We see the dark side of this technology, but we also have to understand there's very good positive uses for it. And, you know, just keep your, you know, always trust and verify. You know, you really have to verify anything that's coming across now when you see the videos.
Yeah, one other thinking of use cases I thought about is if a band member passes away.
Oh, yeah.
There's so much voice out there that you could honestly, now as far as the in person, you know, and they could even potentially be like a hologram, which they probably before, but they can create new music now if a band member passes away.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the one thing that I'm holding out for. I'm a guitar player, but I never got a chance to see Jimi Hendrix. So that's kind of my... When we get this technology where I can go see Jimi Hendrix play live,
yeah,
then it's all worth it.
yep, exactly. Yep. No, that's a perfect use case too. And you can have the whole deep fake. You can just have someone up there and they just have the deep fake on them and it looks like them and it sounds like them. Yeah. What would you like to plug?
I don't really have anything to plug.
Okay.
I'm good. I just recently retired from MasterCard, but here in probably just taking a couple months off, then I'll go see where else I might want to continue this battle, you know, for cybersecurity.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Well, Dr. Wendt, thank you for joining me to discuss deepfakes.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And that will do it. Hopefully you learned something. If you didn't, email me at timothy.dblock@exploresec.com or reach out to me on LinkedIn. Let me know what you didn't learn and we'll cover it in a future podcast. Show notes can be found at exploresec.com/EIS. If you enjoyed the show, share it with others and rate it on your favorite podcast platform. You can fill out the contact form at exploresec.com/contact. You can sign up for the newsletter and subscribe to the RSS feed to stay up to date with the latest new content on exploresec.com. We will see you next time, Security Explorers.